Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University and is a licensed chiropractor with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. In the next 60 minutes, you're going to begin to understand your lab tests, the laboratory tests that you ask your medical doctors to run every 6 months to a year when you do your annual or biannual physical and clinical exam. Those lab tests that you come in to my office, that you take to other holistic practitioners and proudly put them down on our desks and say, my blood tests here are normal and I'm happy about it. Well, I'm happy about it too, except in 60 minutes, we're going to understand really what's underneath that statement and that happiness. And unfortunately, I have to tell you, for the most part, it's innocence and ignorance. And that is the truth. You're not getting the tests you need. They're not generally being explained to you correctly. And for all sorts of great reasons, hidden there under the dusts and notes of true science are the reasons that you have to be a little bit more than skeptical when you're told at the end of your physical or clinical exam that all things are normal. You've got to understand what's happened in medicine, that when holistic health care began to interpret blood tests, they began to exaggerate the claims that the allopaths were making. In other words, what happened over a period of years is because we have in the hospitals managed care not doing the tests correctly, we had a rebound effect in holistic medicine where those doctors then began to misinterpret also on the other end of the pendulum. The truth ends up being in the middle, and that's what we have to get into today. So first we're going to go after your standard hospital test, the one you get at Kaiser, the complete blood test, the chemistry panel, the urinalysis. We're going to start to understand what you're missing there. And then if we have time by the end of the show, we're going to go into how holistic medicine then has reinterpreted these findings, only they've stretched things to the other extreme. So what are we left with? The public is confused because their doctors tell them that their tests and their findings are normal, and they're skeptical, and then they go to the holistic practitioners only to find out that the holistic practitioners find things that also make them skeptical. So we've got a hodgepodge here, and again, it comes down to a basic premise that the real science isn't being understood. So let's take a look at this. When you go to the doctor and you order, or they order for you, the standard physical test, it's called a complete blood test, a CBC or a hematology panel. You'll see that on your printouts when you're given them. You're also going to get chemistry tests, and the chemistry tests will also be called metabolic panels. Now, one of the principles here, and so let's deliver the first principle of the problem. When you look at your blood work, your hematology, where you see CBC and RBC and WBC, one of the problems with this is before the blood is deficient, the soft tissue of the body, the bones, will exhaust themselves. In other words, when we're simply looking at the blood to determine what the problem is, what we're not taking into account is that every time there's a problem in the blood, the body's going to buffer it. So the blood is what you call a buffer system. This is a really important thing to understand about your blood work. That no matter what you see in the blood, the minute it gets deficient, the brain tells some other part of your body to dump its reserve mineral, its reserve chemical, its reserve hormone, whatever it might be. Your brain is telling your reserve systems, your bone and your soft tissue, your muscles, your organs, to dump into the blood whatever deficiency is in the blood. So if you're getting a blood test, that's the last place you're going to find a problem. Our first line of inquiry in the standard allopathic model each year with your physical exam is the blood. And that is the last place you should be looking for a problem. By the time it gets to the blood, you have an emergency medical situation. You have disease processes ensuing. Very important principle. On top of which, the infections, which we often look for in the blood, don't go to the blood. They hide in the cells. We're going to break down the hematology or the complete blood count. And cell by cell, we're going to go into what exactly that means. So first concept for you to sit on before you get too happy or innocently complacent about the blood work that you've gotten each year from your doctor, the first concept is the blood is the last place you're going to find the deficit. Now, yes, we need that. When you have an emergency situation, when you have emergency medical issues, issues that rush you to the hospital, of course it's important to take that blood test. But when you're generally healthy and you're interested and your interest is staying healthy, you're left with a very poor inquiry there. So you sit back and you rest and you feel that you've been taken care of and that your health is going to continue to be radiant when there are so many processes going on outside your blood that we're not testing. And this kind of reflects what, to some extent, Kaiser or your allopathic model will understand, except that there is a financial issue now in the way managed healthcare works where doctors are told to minimize testing. We went from maximal testing in the 80s and 90s to minimal testing in the late 90s and then into the 2000s. So you have to understand that when you go into your doctors now, they're not going to run the tests because they're under their own type of pressure. And that's the purpose of the show here, to teach you so you'll know what tests to ask. So the blood is a buffer. Secondarily, we had a biochemist by the name of Roger Williams. He took his doctorate years ago, 60, 70, 80 years ago, from the University of Austin in Texas. His name was Roger Williams. He wrote a groundbreaking book called Biochemical Individuality. And biochemical individuality basically stated that 15% of all the tests that you get to determine your health, 15% of those tests have norms, the normal ranges that you see on the extreme right of all your lab tests. 15% of all the tests you get, the norm for it is different than your norm. Your personal norm, your biochemically individual you, have norm ranges outside the one you're reading to the right of your sheet. And that is 15 to 20% of all tests. Now, the implication of that is massive. Because what it's saying then is that your blood work is really only worth the norm, your norm, which is a norm that you have to take and accumulate over a series of multiple tests over years. Completely flips up the concept of the blood test. The blood test has to be interpreted. Every norm that you get, from hemoglobin to C-reactive protein to the number of neutrophils or white blood cells you're supposed to have, or your ALT or your GGTP tests and for your liver enzymes, any of these tests that you read that are clocked as normal or abnormal need to be interpreted relative to your last, hopefully, decade of tests. When you do your hormonal panels, what those panels say today, meaning you're above normal, you're below normal, you're hypo, you're hyper, have to be interpreted relative to you. Now, this is critical if you're interested in radiant health. If you're interested in staying healthy, you have to understand that before your body begins to degenerate to an illness, to a symptom, it's going to show up in blood work. But only if the blood work has been taken maybe 10 times in 10 years. So the data that you save over a decade becomes critical in determining what's going high or low, rather than just that one snap, that one frame that's not taken into consideration relative to your prior tests leaves you in nowhere land. By the time you have a problem interpreting it that way, you have a disease. And we'll get into really how that functions when we talk about the kidney. So the myth of the blood test, number one, the blood is a buffer system. If you're looking in the blood, it's generally the last place you're going to find an issue, because when the blood is deficient, the body will take from the bone and the soft tissue. Second myth of the blood test, that the norm they're giving you is your norm. And as Williams proved, 15% of all the norms are not your norm, which means to say your blood work is really only worth the number relative to the last 10 years of the numbers. So important in hormonal work. So important when we assay the liver function. So important when we assay kidney function. All right, let's take a look at the CBC. If you've got a CBC, a complete blood count, listen to the show later today or get yours out now and take a look at it. You're going to see something that says hematology. Hematology just means blood, the blood panel, the complete blood count. When you look at it, generally at the top of the page, you're going to see the WBCs, the white blood cells. Again, we have a host of immune system cells produced in the bone marrow, produced in the thymus gland. And those immune system cells are measured in your blood panel. And the first thing generally people look at is the complete blood count. And the first thing under the complete blood count is the white blood cell. The white blood cell, when it's high, you're going to be told you have an infection. And that's reasonable. In every acute infections, again, this is the point. This is the purpose of this show. To give you an insight here, what you pay for with your health insurance every single year, as it relates to these blood tests, are generally for acute situations, whether it's an acute, sudden infection, or whether you have a disease process ensuing. But when you have chronic problems, chronic infections, as we'll see with the WBCs, these sorts of assays are not that effective. So let's take an example here. A WBC, if it's very high, if it's way beyond the range, forget the Roger Williams statement. When you have something that's very high, that's very much outside the norm, 25% higher than the norm, 30%, 50%, 1,000%, there's a problem. And we're glad we have these tests because they'll show there's problems. However, when you have a chronic problem, your WBCs may be just high normal. And high normal passes as normal. And here's the point. If you had the year before and the year before that and the year before that, and your blood test was interpreted relative to the findings over the last number of years, that's the insight you're looking for. But here's a spin on this. Your white blood cell, which is produced in the bone marrow, which is an immune system cell that goes after bacterial infections generally, that's got all sorts of little friends like macrophages and neutrophils, these cellular garbage men that go after not the little not the tiny viruses, but the bigger animals, the bacteria, the parasites, if possible. These bugs often don't live in your blood. So the white blood cell that we're measuring to determine whether or not you're infected may be circulating in areas where those infections don't go. Bugs, parasites, viruses, bacterias. Remember, one of the themes in this show continually is that these microscopic forms of life have intelligences. And usually, they don't live in the blood. Often, they don't stimulate an immune system response. So it's good to measure your WBCs, but it's not so prudent to be told your white blood cells are normal and we've done our infective inquiry. You've passed the test for infection, and obviously you don't have that. There are many other levels. And when you have symptoms or lifestyles that suggest infection, again, this concept, they may not live in the place we're testing. Very important. Outside of an acute problem, the WBC count isn't particularly useful. But I'll give you an exception to that. And there's always exceptions. When the WBCs, and this is what your doctors won't tell you, because they don't study it this way. When your white blood cells and your red blood cells, we're going to get to the red blood cell in a moment. When your white blood cells and the cell underneath your white blood cell, your red blood cells, are both low, very often you're looking at protein deficiency. Now, when they're frighteningly low, because they're produced in the bone marrow, you're looking at problems in the bone marrow. And one of the things we call very low white blood cell count and very, very low red blood cell count is aplastic anemia. It means that for whatever reason, the bone marrow is not producing the white blood cell or the red blood cell. So when you see both of them very low, it starts to suggest protein deficiency. But when they are what we call dangerously low, when they threaten life as we know it, when people are clearly sick, then we start to call this aplastic anemia, and we start to look into then problems in the bone marrow. And that's a whole other show and a whole other discussion. When for whatever reason, the normal machinery inside your bone marrow is interfered with and you just can't produce your white blood cells and your red blood cells, we may have an early stage disease process occurring. We may have an early stage fibrotic condition occurring in the bone marrow. So where this white blood cell count gets misinterpreted very often, it's not when it's very high, because when it's very high, it's an acute infection. It's when it's just borderline high, but it's increased considerably over a period of 5 or 6 years. That's relevant, and that often is missed. So there's your first pearl. And when that WBC count and your RBC count are just low, not disease level low, but just a little bit low, very often, that's low-grade protein deficiency. You see it very often with vegetarians. And of course, if the WBCs and the RBCs produced in the bone marrow are very, very low, well, then we have a problem in the bone marrow, and that's a whole other show. Now, on to these RBCs, the red blood cells. So under the white blood cells, you're going to see red blood cells. Again, the red blood cell is produced in the bone marrow, and it's got a very studied molecule, very studied cell. It's biconcave, so it's like a basketball pushed in on both of its sides. So it's flattened out. It dips in concavity in the center. And it's got a molecule called hemoglobin. And the hemoglobin holds iron in the center of it. So an RBC holds hemoglobin, and hemoglobin holds iron. And iron binds oxygen. So RBC, hemoglobin, iron, binding oxygen. Well, the RBC is just a carrier. It's a workhorse. And all it does is go to the lung and bind oxygen, travel to the tissue, dump the oxygen, pick up carbon dioxide, carry that back to the lung where it got its oxygen, and dumps out the carbon dioxide. So the RBC, the second cell you look at in the hematology panel, is a carrier of oxygen and CO2. It's your workhorse for O2-CO2 exchange. Of course, the implications of that are enormous. Because, one, we've got to have enough red blood cells. We need enough of them produced in the bone marrow. And then, of course, we're going to need iron. And if the hemoglobin molecule doesn't have the iron, then how does it pick up the oxygen? And if it doesn't, we've got a problem too. So we're going to get into that. So the RBC, when it's not produced in large enough quantities, if it's coupled with a low production of white blood cell, very often that's protein deficiency. If the RBC by itself is low, that can mean a lot of things. One of the things it can mean is that the fats, this is where everything is so interconnected and therefore fascinating. When the RBCs are produced in not high enough quantities, it can be because their 120-day life cycle, their 120-day life cycle, when an RBC is produced, it lives 120 days. So that's 4 months in your blood. And when it goes over to the spleen, and the spleen is an organ, it's a blood-filled organ in the upper left side of your belly. When they go through the spleen, and the spleen eats a lot of blood, when those RBCs go through the spleen crushes them. The spleen is an inspector. It is a quality control machine for the integrity of the RBC. The spleen, an organ, in your upper left quadrant of your belly. Often you're told you don't need a spleen. Well, you can live without one, but you definitely need one. The spleen is the quality control inspector for the 120-day life cycle of the RBC. And when the RBC gets crushed through the spleen, that's what happens in the spleen. The RBC is compressed. If the membrane of the red blood cell does not have integrity, it explodes. And a big part of that integrity of the membrane of the RBC, a big part of that integrity are the essential fatty acids. One of the ways we learn about the body is through the red blood cell. We take glycosylated hemoglobin, and I'll get into that later on. That's a measurement of how the red blood cell utilizes glucose. We take an RBC magnesium test. That's a measurement of how the red blood cell utilizes magnesium. And we do this because it's a great cell to learn from. One of the ways you can learn something about the integrity of this cell is how long it lasts when your bone marrow produces it. So when you start to see low normal productions of red blood cells, one of the things you look for is deficiency in the pliability, the bendability, the flexibility of the red blood cell membrane. Membranes have to be, not just an RBC membrane, all cell membranes have to be pliable. You have to be able to stick your finger into them, and your finger just bounces out. When that membrane loses integrity, it means the membrane's no longer plastic. It's just like tissue paper. You press your finger into it, and the cells, the guts of the cell just explode. So when we go essential fatty acid deficient, all your omega-3s, your cholesterol, boy, if you listen to these shows, you can start to think. You're on Lipitor, which really decreases the cholesterol your liver makes. And you're being told you need to do that when you really don't, because it's inflammation that causes the problem. But you drank the Kool-Aid, and you're on the Lipitor, and your CoQ10 reserves are gone, and you're not producing healthy cholesterol in the amount that your body that's trying to regenerate from illness needs. Without that cholesterol, worse yet, they've taken out your gallbladder and you can't digest your fats, or you're not getting them. So think about this. You're 60 years old. You're 70 years old. They've taken out your gallbladder. You're on a statin drug to prevent heart disease, which the gallbladder's absence is going to produce, but you're not being told that. You're simply told your cholesterol's high, so let's give you a statin drug. Now your cholesterol's low. They can't even read the right number because they don't know your body will increase cholesterol production as the body begins to heal. Little known issue. Science understands it. Your medical doctors, they forgot it, if they ever even learned it. So you're on the statin drug now. Follow this. This is really where it's at. You're on the statin drug. You're not producing your CoQ10. You're not producing your cholesterol. And what's going to happen to the membrane of that red blood cell? No essential fatty acids, no cholesterol. That's what the membrane's made of. And so when those red blood cells go through the spleen and the spleen crushes them, as the quality control instructor, you're left with a consistent low-grade RBC deficiency. Well, if you don't have enough RBCs, even if you have the iron to get the oxygen, but you don't have enough of the RBCs, you're never going to get enough oxygen in the lung. Now, you guys know the consequences of not having enough oxygen circulating through the body. Hypoxia, meaning low tissue oxygen. And that forces the cell to start to produce its energy in an anaerobic, a without oxygen environment. That's what we call, I worked out too much and my muscles are burning because I'm filled with too much lactic acid. People live like that. Sick people, people who are going to get sick, people that don't feel that good, are usually living in oxygen deficient states. That's why you take a hematology panel. That's why you look at the RBCs. That's why you have to have someone interpreting them that understands a whole other level of science. You're getting that today. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health, and we are giving it to you straight. You're going to need to repeat this show. I understand that. But I archive the shows for you so you can repeat it. And again, in case you haven't heard me harp on this before, the theme of the show, the theme is this. You're walking in to your managed health care facility, getting your blood tests each year. You're being told they're normal. Half the time, you're not even getting the tests you're supposed to get. Half the time, the doctor's not even looking at them more than a moment or two. All the time, almost all the time, the doctor doesn't even have the training in science. If the doctor has an anarchistic, or I should say outside the box view of the blood test, it's often a holistic view of the blood test, which is filled with quackery, quite frankly. Holistic interpretations of blood work were built off the rebound effect of very, very strict conservative blood work. That was the norm. No matter which way you cut it, there is a whole inquiry into blood testing that's vital for your health. I just painted a scenario for you. So my plea to you is to start to take the time to learn. If you want health, you have to commit a little bit more deeply. You have to think of it like school. You have to think of it like the school you went to learn how to invest your money. You like to think to it about the school you went to learn how to raise your kids. You have to think of it just on a deeper level so you can take control of it. Let's keep going. If this red blood cell is produced in the amount or the number that it's supposed to be, meaning it's well within the normal range, and hopefully you have the blood work, and it's all been normal over the last 5 or 6 years, you may start to see another reading on your blood test. H is in Harry, G is in girl, B is in boy, the hemoglobin. And the hemoglobin is going to have its norm. And that norm may also be well below the norm. It may be an 11. It may be a 10. It may be a 9. Now, I did show number 41 on anemia, which is low hemoglobin, pernicious anemia. I did a show on a lot of this. That's show number 41. So I'm not going to get really into this too much today. But as a cursory glance, if that hemoglobin's not normal, that's a prerequisite for disease. If your hemoglobin's supposed to be 12 to 16, and you've been running it at 11.5 or 11, that's no good. That means your cells don't have oxygen. That's laying the groundwork for mayhem. That's chaos, potentially, in a cell. But you know all that. Here's what I've never said on radio, or rarely said. And here's what your doctor is missing every single time. Almost every time I see doctors miss this. And if you're in managed care, strict managed care, they're never going to get this. Because it costs more money. So you've got to ask for it, irregardless of where your hemoglobin is. And that is a ferritin test. F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N. Ferritin. Let's discuss this for a moment, and then a couple of interpretations on it that I think are commonly missed in clinical medicine. Number one is when the ferritin is low. And what is ferritin? Ferritin is stored iron. So if you eat more iron than your body needs in the red blood cell, in the blood, your liver, once again, Mr. Liver, stores the iron. Liver is a delicacy out in nature. As you know from the Discovery Channel and the animal shows, the first thing the cougar eats when it kills the deer is the liver. In nature, the liver is prized. Why? It stores tons of nutrition, the B vitamins. It stores iron. The liver stores iron in the human being in the form of ferritin. Now, here's what's neat. If your range, if you're a woman and your range is 12 to 16, and your hemoglobin is 12.5, and you took that reading day 13 of your cycle, not day 26, not during your period, but day 13 of the cycle, even if your ferritin is low, meaning you have no stored iron, you just might not be anemic that day. Because on that day, you have enough iron, you have enough reserve iron to clock in at 12.5 when low normal is 12. But suppose they took that blood test after you did a marathon or after a week of working out. Suppose they did that blood test 1 week before your period started, or during your period, when you're working out. Well, you can get a very, very, very different number then. And you already know the answer. If you're 12.5 and they're taking it at your strongest time, and you've got no reserve ferritin, well, then you'll dip below that 12.5 to maybe an 11 for 2 weeks out of the month. Yeah, it can vary that much that fast. Which is to say, when you got clocked in at 12.5 and they didn't take your ferritin to find out that your serum ferritin was 30 or 20 or 5, that you barely had any reserve iron in the liver, you are functionally anemic then. You may be anemic 10 days out of every 30 days of the month for all your childbearing years and maybe for your whole life. And this adds up, and this is no good. And this is potentially dangerous because it's common sense, isn't it, to understand that now you're hypoxic. If you don't have the iron, you have nothing to bind to the hemoglobin. even if you have enough red blood cells circulating, because they passed inspection in the spleen and the bone marrow is clean enough to produce them all at the right number, you still don't have iron to bind oxygen. So you're going to live in acidosis, which is the groundwork for anarchy disease, subclinical disease. You see, if we think in terms of disease states, if we think about disease and the acute emergency level moment, we've missed the whole point. Especially in holistic health, we've missed the whole point. It's wonderful for your internist. It's wonderful for your hospitals. It is a privilege and a godsend that they can understand acute medical care. But remember, you're spending your hard-earned money in managed care, or your company is, to get blood tests each year to give you a sense of where you're at and how you're doing. And they're nonsense. Hopefully, we'll have time to get into the cardiac panel today. If not, maybe I'll do part two of this next week. But the point is, most of what's being interpreted is being interpreted poorly. There's a wealth of information. There's one example. Now, here's another issue with hemoglobin. Very often, hemoglobin is low. And guess what? The ferritin is high. It's very high. So let's understand the implication of that. When the hemoglobin is low, it tends to mean that there's not enough iron circulating in the body. So there's not enough iron to complete the molecule, so the molecule will clock in as low hemoglobin. So you might have a 10, or a 10.5, or 11, not the 12 to 16, not that healthy 13 to 14 to 15 range that we want. In the event that hemoglobin's low, the first thing you do if you're a good clinician is you look at the ferritin to see what's stored up there. You expect to see the ferritin low also. But you have lots of cases out there. I just saw one a few weeks ago where the hemoglobin's low, but the ferritin is high. Now, that makes no sense at first because it says, well, you don't have enough iron, but your liver has a lot of iron because your ferritin's high, but it's not giving it up. And you're right, it's not giving it up. We have cases. This is a fascinating phenomenon in the physiology of the body, that sometimes the body will store iron and not give it up, even though the red blood cell is screaming for it. Sometimes the body will keep iron, it will hoard its iron. It'll keep it sequestered in the liver. And the ferritin levels will go up to 400 or higher than 400. They'll go up through the roof, and the hemoglobin molecule is screaming, give me iron. I cannot complete myself. This is counterintuitive. When people see this, it makes no sense. Now, here's a twist on blood work. And again, this is what you're not hearing from your doctor, I assure you. Very often, or I should say, through the evolution of our species, of Homo sapien, the body learned that when it's infected, and of course the history of our species is combating infections, but evolutionarily speaking, the body's learned that when it's fighting infection, don't give the infection iron. Infections eat iron. Parasites eat iron. Bacteria eats iron. Lots of things that eat you eat your iron. So the body's learned. Look for signs of infection. The body's learned it. Some intelligence, bigger than you are, bigger than your conscious mind is, has learned to scan the body to look for signs of infection. And one of the great signs of infection is inflammation. When you have an infection, a microbe, a parasite, a bacteria, a virus, or what we have never even discovered, eating away at a cell, eating away at the organ in a cell, little bits of that cell flake off. That initiates an inflammatory response. We just did a show on this about a month ago or so. And that inflammatory response is understood by the brain. And the brain understands it as infection. We evolved to understand inflammation as infection. And the brain, seeing and understanding this, will tell the liver. Now, how does it tell? Does it talk to the liver? It's not a cartoon. It's easy to understand it if we make it a cartoon, but it's really not. The brain understands electrochemical signals. Intelligence is transmitted electrically through the nervous system and chemically through ions, sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium, phosphorus, who knows what else. Electrochemically, the brain sees the inflammation, sends a signal to the liver, and says to the liver, hold your iron. Do not release your iron. Because it doesn't want the bacteria to get it. Whether you're infected or not, the brain responds the same way. So you can have anemias, low hemoglobins, iron deficiency anemia, HGB. It's a 10 or an 11 or a 9. And yet tons of transferrin, tons of stored iron. When your doctor sees that, they're supposed to. Usually they don't. They're supposed to understand you are in a gross inflammatory state. That it's the inflammation in your body. And how do you measure the inflammation? CRP, one of the ways you measure inflammation in the body, one of the ways is the CRP. One of the ways are all the oxidative stress tests that other companies run, not Kaiser. One of the ways is to run homocysteine, which is an inflammatory compound very, very related to cardiovascular function. So anytime you see anemia with the ferritin high, you must be running a CRP or a homocysteine and a homocysteine. Whether you're anemic or not, you should be running these panels. Later when we get to cardiac function, all the cardiac profiles I read each week, and we don't see CRP or homocysteine measured. This is not a good idea. All the markers for inflammation should be run. Because inflammation, like anemia, will drive disease. And yet, we don't see these run. They cost more money to run. We're told there's no reason to run them. A low normal anemia over 10 years should have had a CRP and a homocysteine run day one. But the way the system works is that it won't run the test until you're in the emergency room and they can't figure out what's wrong. By the time they run the tests, it's too late. This is where you have to take action. So a couple of tidbits then on iron deficiency anemia, low hemoglobin. Check and get your ferritin measured. Ferritin. Get your CRP and your homocysteine measured. That should be standardized. Aplastic anemia, that's when the white blood cells and the red blood cells are not produced. That's another type of anemia. And you get that by measuring the WBCs and the RBCs, which you get already. And yet, if they're low normal, nobody tells you there's a problem. Look to protein deficiency. Ask yourself if you're getting enough good quality 8 essential amino acid protein sources. If you're a vegetarian, if you're a vegan, be really careful with that. Again, the point, if you run low normal, if you run not completely empty, but on almost empty, there is long-term damage. You accelerate multiple systems into deficiency. And you're asking for mayhem to break loose in your body. It's not the way to get healthy. It's not the way to stay healthy. And yet, because it's not acute, it's missed. Let's keep going. You're going to see other tests run. You're going to read the neutrophil. You're going to read the lymphocyte. Again, we're in the hematology section. You're going to read the eosinophil, the basophil. Neutrophils go after bacterial infections. Lymphocytes go after viral infections. Eosinophils, they can measure an allergic response. they can measure a response to parasitic infection. And these are, in acute situations, very helpful. But if you have chronic situations, a chronic viral infection, a chronic bacterial infection, a chronic parasitic infection, the amount of false negative that these three indices can pump out is almost, to make these tests outside of severe acute states, almost useless. So you have to understand, again, the concept of false negative. There is much false negative in blood work. So there's always another interpretation to it's normal. Is it normal because the blood's buffered it? Is it normal because you're looking in the blood and it's not in the blood? How can it really be normal in the face of, doctor, I don't feel good? Doctor, I have headaches. I have chills. I have night sweats. I have heart palpitations. Something's wrong. I'm sorry, your blood work is normal. You have to have more education than that. Neutrophil, lymphocyte, eosinophil, false negative. How can we find infection when it's there? It's called a biopsy. But we have a problem with that. If you're alive and somewhat healthy, how are we going to take a piece of your organ out to look for infection? The reality that infections elude the immune system, the reality that infections are not in the blood but in the cells or between the cells of organs, that reality is called postmortem biopsy. There is so much to be learned from postmortem biopsy and so many ethical issues about it. But nonetheless, bulk of medicine, of infectious disease, much of it, I should say, is learned postmortem biopsy. The book is called Plague Time by Paul Ewald. He's a biologist out of Amherst. Wonderful book, groundbreaking book, suggesting all what we call disease from cardiovascular to autoimmune to cancer, so integrally related to infection. But not the infection you're finding when you look on your hematology panel at your neutrophils and your lymphocytes and your eosinophils. Not that place, because those tests are not designed to find out where these infections live. And, of course, this is part of Ewald's point or inference. So just so you and I make this clear together, my listening audience, when you feel intuitively like something's running your life, like there's something in you that's got an intelligence, and I'm dead serious about this left-field statement I'm about to make. When you feel like there is an intelligence inside you running your physiology, and I have heard people tell me this hundreds of times, understand that there may well be. Bless this day that you're hearing this from me. Because there may well be. And it is ignorant and arrogant for science to say, no, Mrs. Smith, there's just nothing there. Because your complete blood count, your hematology panel doesn't suggest it. And on the topic of infectious disease is the concept then that will run all the antibody panels. In other words, the lymphocyte, which we're measuring, when it sees a virus or whatever it wants to go after, it produces little missiles to destroy the virus. And those little missiles are called antibodies. Well, if we run antibody panels, because yes, we have you, the patient, succeeded in making the argument that you know there's infection, or even though they can't find it, you're sure that living 10 years off a swamp somewhere in a foreign country produced infection, or you had a acute infection of something that's vanished, and you're being told it's gone, but it's lurking, and you know it. And no test can show it. If you push your infective disease doctor, your infectious disease doctor, if you're fortunate enough to get through the gate and find one, but once you get there, he'll run antibody panels. These panels are also next to useless because it's extremely difficult to determine between current infection, chronic infection, in and out of the other, and functionally speaking, they elude They keep in the dark, even your best clinicians. So your antibody panels that are run as a higher level test for infection. And again, we're on the hematology panel. This is how beautifully flowery it gets. These immunologic patterns, tests that are run, antibody panels, often leave people hanging. The one test we have hoped for is the PCR, polymerase chain reaction test. Now, this is pretty slick, and this is the future. It's also the present. It still gives false negatives. But this is where, if you're suspecting infection, if there's anything alluding to it on your plain old $100 blood test, if there's anything necessitating further inquiry, and you can get a PCR test, whether you have a virus, a bacteria, a parasite, something else we haven't even discovered, it's going to die at some reasonable rate, or it's going to shed itself. It's going to leave its genetic excrement in your blood. Sooner or later, we're going to see sequences of nucleotides, of purines and pyrimidines, of genetic material that doesn't resemble anything we know, that's not something human. And if we start to see in a nucleotide sequence abnormally high amounts of what we know to be a certain type of a virus or parasite, we can start to suspect that you have the infection. When you get Epstein-Barr, when you get hepatitis, when you get Lyme, you run PCR tests to determine whether they're present, because those bugs are clever. Lyme morphs. It changes form all the time. It runs from the blood into the cell and back into between the cells. It goes dormant for years and then pops out as soon as the coast is clear. And these are one of many types of tests that all might begin with a plain old hematology panel and overlooked when that hematology panel is normal. When your lymphocyte titer is normal, you'll be told you can't be infected. This is, of course, nonsense. This is, of course, the travesty. So understand, higher up is a better interpretation. Higher up is potentially antibody panels. Higher up is PCR testing. And higher up is the profile of you, the patient, and how you feel. Now, that last statement is counterintuitive to medicine. I don't want it to be counterintuitive to you if you've listened to my show. Which, by the way, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. If you're tuning in for the first time, this is Straight Talk on Health. Get to the website. For my shows, you need to get to the website, straighttalk.cc. That's straighttalk.cc. Listen and learn and understand your future is in your hands, not in your doctor's hands. And this is a call for you to get that and get integrated and get a higher level, which is why I started my school, the Medici Institute for Advanced Nutritional Education. We'll be reeling it out tomorrow, heavy and thick, starting 12 o'clock at the Premier Center in Santa Monica. We have two spaces left. I'm going to take 35 students instead of 30. We've got two spaces left. If you're interested, and you should be if you're listening to this show, 310-559-0811, 310-559-0811. Call Annika, 310-559-0811. It's inexpensive. You'll be there 6 to 8 hours. We're going to do food tomorrow. And we've done this a few weeks ago. We're ready and set to go. And that'll be one of many classes that I hope you join me for. Let's keep going. The chemistry panel. That's all I want to say about the blood panel, meaning the hematology panel, meaning the complete blood count. They're called by different names. Don't be confused. The chem panel, the first thing you see on the metabolic panel or the chemistry panel is glucose. Glucose is a dangerous word because it means so many things. All your cells, so understand this, all your cells, your brain cells, your liver cells, your kidney cells, your stomach cells, your intestinal cells, all the cells of your body, your cardiac cells, will function on only and nothing but glucose. They can't use anything but glucose. They can, your body can convert amino acids to glucose. It can convert fatty acids to glucose, but in the end, the cell swallows glucose for you to have life. Now, starting with that reality and going all the way to high glucose, hyperglycemia, diabetes mellitus, type 2 diabetes, type 1 diabetes, all the diseases that come from that is one big spin. But let's all agree in the beginning, glucose is good. When your doctors test the fasting blood glucose, and again, glucose on your metabolic panel has to be fasting. If that passes inspection and you're told you're fine, you're not fine. That's not good. It's still worth deeper inquiry because if you go out at night at 11 p.m. and eat 20 donuts and 3 Coca-Colas and have a panic attack, half the population under the age of 60 years old is going to have normal blood sugar in the morning. And you're still running risk, even though your fasting blood glucose is normal. And next week, I'm going to tell you what to do about that. I can't believe how fast it goes. 60 minutes already gone. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. I promise I'll pick up here next week. God bless. Have a great week.
Been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part, you can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.